Hey, everybody. It's Baseball America Hot Sheet Show time. I'm Jacob Rudner, joined by JJ Cooper and Ian Kunbo. We've got a loaded show for you today and a loaded one over at baseballamerica.com. Make sure you go on over there, subscribe. We've got tons of content, top 30s for every team. We're just updated. For some teams, that means new number one overall prospects. For some teams, that means just some new faces, draft picks, and trade deadline additions are added to those lists now. So again, head on over to baseballamerica.com. And as we go through this show, if you want to ask us some questions, be it about top 30s or really anything baseball related, throw them on into the comments and we will get to them at the end of the show. But before we do that, let's hit the first move. Like I said, post-trade deadline updates. All 30 teams, they are updated and ready to go. That meant some big changes for some teams. JJ, we'll start with you. Who were the biggest evolvers at the trade deadline? There were some really big changes and some big notable additions.
It may seem strange to not say the Tigers since they traded Tarek Skubal, and they were a big changer. But I would say that two teams that really jump out, like there's a lot. But one of the things, the first things that jumps out to me is kind of one that sold but didn't sell much, right? Which is, I think that the Rays actually did a good job of helping themselves. But at the same time, it was kind of a trade deadline for them that really showed the value of having prospects in bulk, because they were able to trade prospects who were not kind of their top tier prospects, but who still had real value. And we see this in the top 30 updates, because there were players, and again, in this update, some of them would have probably moved into the Rays top 30 as well, but they'd have been very back of the Rays top 30, and then they get traded, and you see like an Emilian Petre, who wasn't on the 30 after the July update, and now I think is 13th on the Mets top 30. That's kind of where you have the value of depth and kind of what it does, and then you do see like what it does for an organization like the Mets, where they kind of have a mixture of trade acquisitions and really kind of rising prospects as well that kind of have reshaped the organization, reshaped the farm system a little bit compared to where it was just a couple of months ago.
Ian, let's talk about some of those new number one prospects. Like I said, there were some changes that happened with trades. What were the ones that stand out to you?
I think, yeah, the Tigers is definitely one. Obviously, they're with the Tarek Skubal trade, that's pretty substantial. But I was going to go to the Angels. Angels obviously have kind of been in no man's land for a while. They finally end up selling, and they get Arjun Namala, who immediately slots in as their number one prospect. And that was a system that coming into the season ranked in the bottom half of the league. They've had some guys take pretty big steps forward this year. Their first round pick last year, Tyler Bremner, hasn't gone as smoothly as you would have hoped, but some of the other arms like Johnny Slawinski's taken a pretty big step forward. But just to get Arjun Namala, to get someone who can slot in as your number one prospect in a deal for Jose Soriano, and then also with some other pitching risers, I think the Angels, that just, it looks a lot better with them, with Namala at the top, than it did prior to the deadline.
I would say, like, when you look at, when you scan the new number, the number ones, I shouldn't say the new number ones, but the number ones, kind of, there weren't a lot of changes there, but I would say that what we really saw was a lot of changes when you get to kind of like the number twos, the number threes in systems. You know, we saw systems that traded off a lot. Franklin Arias is still a Red Sox. I'll tell you this, the rest of that top 10 looks a lot different than it did not that long ago. You look at a team like the Orioles, and you know they do have a new number one, Anthony Eianson, but it's not just the new number one. They have a lot of guys after that. We did see a lot of movement. But the other thing that we also see at this time, I think we should probably highlight also, we see players who just move up, who, not because of trade deadline or anything like that, just because of what they're doing. We're now far enough in the Dominican Summer League season that we feel much better kind of about what is going on in the DSL, which admittedly is as far away from the major leagues as you can get in pro baseball. Those players, the stars, many of them will jump to the Arizona Complex or Florida Complex leagues next year, then to low A, then high A, double A, triple A. So these aren't players who are knocking on the door of the major leagues or anything like that, but it is where we got the first inklings of a Jesus Madey or a Jackson Churio or a Joshua Gonzalez were truly elite prospects. And Ian, I kind of want to tee you up on this a little bit, but we got Gomez, the Royals outfielder, is kind of an example of a guy who we feel pretty confident about now is an elite prospect, moved well into our top 100. I don't think we'd have been confident about that 2-3 months ago.
No, certainly not. I mean, and that's the hardest thing is, you know, the DSL, it's one of the hardest leagues to get information on because you've got it starts anew every year. You don't know the level of competition guys are playing. And so it's kind of hard to get a barometer for, are these numbers, you know, real, or are they kind of like what happens when you're facing a bunch of guys throwing 90 who don't know how to throw strikes, which happens a lot in the DSL. And I think in Gomez's case, he's someone that he checks every box when we're doing our research. You know, we've talked to scouts down there. Ben Badler obviously does our international coverage, was extremely high on him coming to here. And then Josh Norris went down there and was able to see him in person. And you combine all that, and then you look at his data, and his data is exemplary. You know, it's above average contact rates, good approach. His EVs would be very good for a major leaguer. He's 17 years old. It's like just under 105, 90th percentile exit velocity, which is crazy for someone his age. And obviously the production has matched it so far this year. I believe he has 2 home runs today also. So his stat line is only getting better there. And, you know, when you combine all of those different sources into one, you get a player that we're very confident in is the next top guy to come out of there and fall in the footsteps, as you said, of Jesus Madé, Josuar Gonzalez, you know, the players that have kind of really been a step above everyone else at the Dominican Summer League level. And I think Gomez is the guy in this year's class, and that's why he jumped well inside the top 50. I think he's like 47th or something right now.
JJ, another team that had a really nice week as far as risers go was the Mets. Mitch Voit, Wandy Esiason, Sammy Stafura, and Emilion Pitre, guys who moved up. Emilion Pitre, obviously the byproduct of a trade. What did you make of the Mets production?
It's a better farm system than it was a week ago. And I will also say that's good because it needed to be. I mean, this is not a system that has had a great year. Let's just be straightforward about it. Obviously, the big league club hasn't had a big year. The one of the trades that kind of led to this is the Freddie Peralta trade, sending Freddie Peralta to the Rays. And yeah, that was a disaster of a trade because that was the guy who was supposed to be a key member for them. And it was kind of more of a sell-off now because he hasn't panned out for the Mets. At the minor league level, though, we have seen, I would say that this has been a mixed bag this year at the minor league level for the Mets. We have seen, obviously, Nolan McClain. We have seen multiple outfielders, kind of establish themselves at the big league level, Carter Benj, AJ Ewing. But flip side, this is a Mets system right now that needed some reinfusion, you know, some talent infusions here at the deadline, and had needed some guys in the system to kind of take steps forward. Mitch Voit just got promoted doing that right now. But bringing in the Stafuras, bringing in the Pitres and the Gary Gilhills and all, because this system's just not as strong as it was farm system wise as it was a year ago or, you know, a year and a half ago. And so we'll see kind of what that means for the offseason for the Mets. But this is kind of they took some, I would say they did a nice job of mixing risk. I'd say that Sammy Stafura is in a perfect example of risk because he has a very power-oriented swing that, if it works, gives you a middle infielder, maybe can stay at shortstop, with real power. And if it doesn't work, he may strike out way too much for that ever to really matter. And they mix that with guys like the Pitres of the world, where Pitre just hits. Like, he's not going to hit for power. He's not going to have a whole lot of impact. Not a ton of defensive value. But he just really hits, and you can feel much safer about the hit tool, which is the toughest tool for a minor leaguer to kind of have. And then you throw in the Wandy Esiasons, who I think is their next premium kind of lower level prospect. We're seeing very, very encouraging signs with him. It's a nice mix here, but they do need it because this is a farm system that has really overall seen some graduations, but otherwise taken a little bit of a step back this year.
Ian, the Cubs were very active at the trade deadline, which means that a lot of prospects exited that system. So there are a lot of new faces. They are one of 2 teams with 7 completely new additions to their top 30, including 3 inside the top 20. Righties Kevin Valdez, Dylan Blomker, and Isaac Morton. What do you make of the changes to that system?
I think, you know, when you look at the Cubs, they're one of the bottom 5 systems. And so there's going to be some changeover, some volatility at the bottom, especially with the number of trades they made, including trading Jefferson Rojas, who's one of their top 100 prospects. But you look at the guys coming in, and there's some really interesting ones there. Someone like Kevin Valdez, as Jacob mentioned, this guy's a late bloomer, but he's got some really interesting pitch shapes, throws a lot of strikes. Like, there's some interesting stuff there. Enrique Oropeza, excuse me. It's a tough one to pronounce. He's someone who's really come onto the radar this year, just absolutely destroys fastballs, huge EVs, approach. Contact's still a work in progress, but there's a lot of upside there. And, you know, those are the guys that in a system like the Cubs, which is in the bottom five, you're going to be wanting to take a shot on, the guys that are going to be rising, because they have some intriguing traits that you can build on in a system that, you know, largely for the most part, because of combination of trades and graduations, is not at the level it was, I think, in past years.
If I could just add on that, I do think a lot of the guys the Cubs traded were guys that's probably good that they got rid of. And I don't mean that as in like they have no hope of them being in big leagues or anything like that. But Jonathan Long doesn't really have a future with the Cubs. And the longer you hold on to him, probably the less value he has. You know, Moises Ballesteros, like it's obviously not ideal. Like if you were going to make this evaluation of Ballesteros, ideally, if you're the Cubs, you do this a year ago where he had a lot more trade value. But moving on from him, he didn't really fit. Like I would say that it was kind of hard to chart out a path where he was going to be a significant player for the big league club anytime soon. And then I would just kind of look at this kind of, I would even say that there's a couple guys where I'm kind of surprised they're still Cubs. Like Kevin Alcantara is a guy where he's going to be out of options soon, and he still doesn't really have a permanent spot at the big league level. I kind of thought maybe, you know, he might be moving on to someone who really has 300, 400 plate appearances kind of to give him to see what he can do. This is a team that really, they, if you look at where their farm system was a couple of years ago, they've had some injuries, but they've also had some guys who really haven't kind of taken that last step forward that you need. And because of that, you had some prospects who I think you're kind of selling them. You see that there's an expiration date on that prospect status. And so it's good to kind of move on before you hit that date.
If you want more on top 30s, head on over to baseballamerica.com, because again, we have a lot of content, risers, fallers, new additions to break down all of the changes that we made, 900 prospects with breakdowns right now. Again, that's baseballamerica.com. And if you have questions that you want to get answered right now, drop them in the chat. We will answer them in a little bit. Right now, though, we're taking a quick break.
I know this is a busy time of year for many of you, including AJ. When you're home, you need everything to get done fast with quality.
Absolutely. That's why Factor meals are perfect for me. Ready in 2 minutes, healthy, pre-made, protein, all the things I like, vegetables. They're all mixed into one, and it's quick, easy, cleanup, done, boom, I'm full. Move on to the next task.
No prep, no cleanup. Every week you'll find over 100 nutrient-dense menu items to choose from and new options like salmon burgers, shredded pork, and much more. Plus, add-ons you'll crave like pumpkin-flavored cheesecake and protein shakes. Let's eat real. Head to factormeals.com/FAL50OFF and use code FAL50OFF to get 50% off and one free breakfast item per box for 1 year while supplies last until 10/31/26. That's code FAL50OFF at factormeals.com, FAL50OFF, factormeals.com. See website for more details.
With talent rankings, it is always a bit of a science, and we do that every time we have these big top 30 updates. We are nearing our next talent rankings update, where we will rank all 30 teams and their minor league talent. JJ, there are some teams that we're going to give a little bit of a sneak peek about, not done with the rankings yet, but some ones that we are sure will be in better spots. The Giants, one of them. Tell us why.
I would say if you looked at, obviously they were busy at the deadline and they did bring in some talent then, but I would say that kind of the big picture with the Giants is there's probably no organization that is more loaded at the lower levels of the farm system. And I mean that the complex leagues, Class A, right? That's where they have prospects beyond that, but that's where the vast majority of their prospects and their most elite prospects kind of reside right now. And that's kind of could be a really good news thing. It does kind of limit you where you are right now, right? Like if you look at the top of our top 100, the top 25 prospects generally without fail are prospects with elite tools who have also performed at AA or beyond. There are exceptions, but that's the general rule. And I would say a year from now, you could see the Giants as the number one farm system in baseball, because if the Josuar Gonzalez's, and we could just go down the list, but you know, like the Henry Lalanes who they traded, they just brought in, who's a left-hander who at his best when healthy has front of the rotation stuff. If those guys are doing what they have done this year, but they're doing it in AA next year, some of them maybe are in AAA, I think that then you are talking about a system that could be, you know, again, best in baseball, even conceivably. The flip side of that is you have to do it. And the reason that we kind of generally do limit our top of the top 100 to prospects who've done it at the upper levels of systems is because there are tests, there are hurdles to overcome to perform at the upper levels. And some of these guys are going to do that. The question is, how many of these guys are going to do that? Because that's where you kind of do see prospects kind of hit those walls and kind of hit those developmental setbacks that kind of expose some of the flaws, some of the things that have to be fixed and sometimes aren't fixed, or injuries arise and all that. So that's a system that I think is very much on the rise. The interesting thing is going to see how much further does it rise in the next year.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you look at a lot of the guys they acquired too. They didn't play it safe here. You know, a lot of their acquisitions was going for ceiling. And you look at someone like Ramon Marquez, who they got from the Phillies, who slotted in. He's inside their top 10, not as high as he was in the Phillies system, obviously, because the Phillies system isn't as good. But this is a guy who has one of the best changeups in all minor league baseball. His changeup has almost a 70% whiff rate this year. And, you know, you add that, he's got a good fastball. Breaking ball is the question. If he had a better breaking ball, he'd be higher on the list. He'd probably be a top 100 prospect already. But there's some variance in his profile. But at the same time, there's considerable upside. And another guy like that, Johnny Hernandez, who they got from the Padres, who ranks just inside the top 20 of their system. But this is a guy, you know, you talk to some scouts in the DSL who thought he was one of the better players they saw down there. And there's a lot of variance in his profile, as JJ said, because of how far away he is. But I like what they did in the sense that they went for ceiling. And, you know, right now they're moving up considerably. And as JJ said, if a lot of these guys continue on the path they're on, this is a system that I think could challenge for the number one spot in the future.
One other name to watch that I just want to mention is Jacob Bresnahan, who's kind of a rising pitching prospect for them. Guy that they got in a Guardians trade, Alex Cobb trade, but is a guy who is very much like moved up and is sitting there not too far off the 100 now.
Ian, we also saw the Orioles sell at the deadline, including Adley Rutschman, who went to the Red Sox for a haul of four prospects, including some top 100 names. What's the deal with their system now, also kind of creeping up in these talent rankings?
Yeah, I mean, they did. It's a little best of both worlds for them right now. They added six guys who went into their top 30, including a new number one prospect in Anthony Ianson, another one in Endy Azokar, who's right on the verge. I think he's just off the top 100 right now and has a chance to make it at some point, maybe even this offseason. But you have that. So you added that influx of talent. But then you also look, and internally, they've had some guys take some pretty big step forward this year. One is Caden Hunter. He's a left-handed pitcher who was a sixth-round pick out of USC last year. He jumped all the way up to number four in the system on the back of just a dominant double-A stretch to start since he's been promoted there. And this is a guy who has four pitches that can miss bats. His fastball whiff rate's almost 40%. You know, his velo's ticked up considerably. His secondaries have continued to improve. And he's someone who coming into the season, at the beginning of the season, you know, in April, you talked to scouts and it was like, he's a reliever. I really like him. But now it's, hey, there's a pretty good chance this guy can start. And you combine that with adding Anthony Ianson, with adding Michael Ferret, adding Kyson Witherspoon. The Orioles just have had, and Joseph Jirwa, another one who's risen considerably, is now in our top 100. He was a draftee from last year. This system, you know, it looks in really good shape. It's got a ton of pitching now. The hitting, they added some really exciting guys in the draft. As I mentioned, Endy Azokar, Jomnardo Reyes is another one who was number 10 with the Twins. He slots in at around 17 because obviously the Orioles system is so deep now. But yeah, they have a ton of exciting talent. Between the draft and the trades, there's just been such an influx of talent. And then you have risers like Caden Hunter and Jaden Lowray, who's another one who was a draftee from last year. It seems like, the Orioles obviously didn't go the way they were hoping at the major league level, but the farm system is on a very, very substantial up arrow trajectory.
We have to talk about it. It has been the buzz of the baseball world ever since it happened. But the Dodgers acquiring Tarik Skubal made waves in part because of the prospects who they sent back to Detroit in order to get them. One of them, River Ryan, a right-handed pitcher. He's 28 years old. He's got electric stuff. JJ, you wrote about whether or not his age is a big-time factor. How much does that matter when evaluating the return the Tigers got?
This is what makes him so interesting to rank. I want to be clear. He is 27 right now. He'll turn 28 next week. He is exactly the same age as Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Just to kind of put it in perspective, I think at this point Yamamoto has 8 seasons of pitching as a frontline starter in Japan and now in the U.S. The challenge of this is I wanted to kind of look at, and what I tried to study was, are there examples of players who kind of had the path of River Ryan? And the answer to that is there are not many. It's first I looked at, okay, well, let's look at pitchers who, starting pitchers who graduate from rookie status as 28-year-olds, because that's going to be River Ryan's case. And there are a couple. There are a couple knuckleballers. R.A. Dickey had a great career. There's guys like Jeremy Guthrie, but Jeremy Guthrie had a two-year mission trip in college. So that kind of delayed his development. You know, if you take out the Japanese guys and Cuban guys who pitched in their love leagues before coming over, there aren't that many for that. And then I did look at it the other way, though. It's like, okay, well, let's look at if there's, is there a prospect who kind of had the same kind of injury issues and then it kind of all clicked. And I would say that that leads to a couple of different studies, give a couple of examples of that, which is Jose Soriano with the Angels, now the Blue Jays, just was traded in the Arjun Namala trade. That's a guy who really did struggle to stay healthy for a long time. And when he did, it clicked. Now, clicked at a lot younger age than River Ryan is right now, but it did click. And the other one I would say is Logan Webb with the Giants is a guy who really did struggle with some injuries early in his minor league career. Eventually got past that. He's been one of the more durable pitchers, I would say, in Major League Baseball in recent years. So there are examples of that where Ryan kind of makes it hard to say that there's a perfect, you know, comparison. Is you the stat that kind of jumped out from putting this together. You do have to remember that River Ryan, he was a two-way player in college, but River Ryan threw a complete game CG at UNC Pembroke when Connor Griffin, the Pirate shortstop, was a fifth grader. So that just kind of puts in perspective that he's been around a long time. He just hasn't had a chance yet to get fully established.
He is also almost 7 years older than Brady Smith, another pitcher who was involved in the trade sent from the Dodgers to the Tigers. He made the skip across the Midwest League and was pretty solid in his first start. Ian, what did you think of Brady Smith in this trade?
Yeah, I thought he was a really nice acquisition by the Tigers and far better than the third piece that he was kind of framed as. This is a guy, I actually had the chance to see him earlier this year. And it's a weird story because he was drafted in 2023, but he didn't make his debut until last year because he was recovering from Tommy John surgery. So he doesn't have a ton of miles on him in pro ball. He's been handled very carefully both last year and this season in terms of kind of working in shorter outings. He started to build up more as this season has gone on, but there's a high ceiling here. This is a great athlete with a really good fastball and just an excellent changeup. You know, we talked about Marquez's changeup. It's not on that level, but it's pretty close. I mean, 56% whiff rate this year on up. It's just, he makes some batters look silly against it. And I think that, you know, he needs to work on his breaking ball shapes. He throws three different variations right now. If he can find some consistency with that, this is a guy who has definitely a chance to be a starter long-term. And I think that, you know, obviously he wasn't as highly ranked in the Dodgers system, but his stock was on an up arrow. And I think if you talk to teams around the game, this is someone who would have been a priority target if they were able to trade with the Dodgers and had access to him. So I think the Tigers did really well getting him as the third piece in the Skubal trade.
Well, if you have questions about that kind of stuff, you should ask it, because now we are going to talk to you and answer your questions right after this quick break.
Science experiment for the 1 minute we have to tell you about why we love Quince electrolytes, including watermelon salt, raspberry salt, and I'm holding a citrus salt, just opened it. I'm going to pour some powder into my water, shake it up. And AJ, why do you love it?
I love Quince because after a long night out, a long day at the gym, a long walk in this Florida humidity, it tastes great and it gives me all the electrolytes I need. Why? Sugar-free, stevia-free, keto-approved, and tastes sweet because of that delicious fermented rice.
It does taste really good. I'm drinking it right now while we're talking about it. It's also made in the USA, rigorously third-party tested. Give your body what it really needs to stay hydrated. Go to quince.com/foul for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/foul for free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/foul. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
It's question answering time, my favorite part of the show, where we answer your questions in the chat. Drop them if you've got them. Let's get it going. Baseball Tossed asked, why did Rock Chalowski fall two spots in the top 100 without playing a game? Doesn't seem fair. JJ, there's a reason for it.
Yeah, because this whole list is not looked at as you're individually moving each player up and down. You're looking at where players rank, right? And when we were looking at it for this time, it really didn't have anything to do with Rock. We didn't really have any real reason to move Rock in any way. He hadn't played any games at that point. He has now. He's hit a couple extra base hits so far in Winston-Salem. But more importantly, it was about moving Theo Gillen up. It was about moving Gillen and basically kind of just the feedback we get on Theo Gillen, the Rays center fielder, is just so positive, so much move up feedback. He's kind of moved up kind of all through the season in our top 100. And so you had Cade Anderson and Theo Gillen ahead of Rock because of what they're doing, much more so than what anything Rock did. Rock really hadn't done anything differently at that point. But it's about moving other guys up, not about moving Rock down.
Ian Murray asks, I haven't heard much about Kadeem Diaw for the Twins. Is he a good prospect that is buried behind Eduardo Tait and now Von Lackey, or just not expect to stay at catcher? Let's change that. What can you tell us about Diaw?
Yeah, Diaw actually, so we have him, he's right in the middle of the Twin system, ranked 16th right now. And he was a pretty big riser earlier in the season, and he's kind of leveled off since then. But been very encouraged by what he's done this year. He's gone out and performed between high and double. He's hitting over 300 for the season, with high walk rate, low strikeout rate. And that's kind of what he does. You know, he puts the ball in play. I don't know how much impact there is. I think the power kind of limits his ceiling, but it's good contact skills. He's a really good athlete. You know, this is a guy capable of playing catcher and outfield. The catcher part is kind of the work in progress. And I think that's the swing here. And the thing that keeps him from the top 10 is, you know, you talk to scouts and it's some think he has a chance to stay there. Others think he's more of like a utility type. Right now, I would just call his defense fringy. If he can get that to average, I think that's kind of the big step to get him into the top 10 would be making that jump defensively. Because if you do that, you can kind of envision, you know, a contact oriented catcher. That's an intriguing skill set given his athleticism and speed. So, yeah, I think he's definitely a legit prospect. That's why we have him, you know, in the Twin system is pretty good. You know, it's a middle of the pack system and he's right on the middle of that list. But I think we need to see a little more defensively for him to jump into the top 10. That's kind of the thing that's keeping him from joining that top 10 group right now.
Next, we got a question from Ben Fullenkamp. Thank you for joining. You're always with us. Anything to read into the Reds sending Eric Becker straight to high A Dayton while Justin LeBron remains in Arizona?
There's a different one.
I think I read the wrong Eric Becker question. Okay. The Reds have sent Eric Becker directly to second base. Is it a mistake to not try him at short, or is it better to slot him in where he may profile long-term right away?
Okay, I'll tie these two together because you did mention LeBron. I think part of this is like Eric Becker, you know, our scouting report before he was drafted was this guy's probably a second baseman or a third baseman long-term, could play short, but you're probably going to have a better shortstop on your team and then you won't play him at short. Well, this is a Reds team that also drafted Justin LeBron. And I can tell you right now, if they end up next year on the same team, Justin LeBron's going to be a better shortstop. Doesn't necessarily mean that we'll never see Eric Becker play a game of shortstop, but he's probably a second baseman in the long term. Justin LeBron's probably a shortstop. And that doesn't mean both of them are going to develop at the same exact pace or anything like that. But no, it does make some sense if you think a guy is absolutely a second baseman. And this is an organization that also has Steele Hall, you know, that has Edwin Arroyo at the upper levels. Like, they have a number of guys who, you know, as you want to have a lot of shortstops in your organization. I think that with that, Becker, if you say, okay, look, the defensive demands are going to be a little less, we want to really develop your bat, I think that this could make some sense. But at the same time, I don't think just because he's playing second base right now at the very end of his draft year precludes that he'll ever, you know, he'll never play shortstop again. Just an example from the different team. Coy James started the year not playing any shortstop for the Nationals, an A-ball. And now Coy James is the everyday shortstop for their low A team. So it does change even during the season sometimes.
All right, Ian, rapid fire to close this out from Froggy Fresh. Are you surprised the Astros didn't move one of their top guys, such as Kevin Alvarez and Jason Chavone? Because of that, it is a positive sign for Houston farm system that's slowly gaining talent.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Astros were a team that could have made a big move at the deadline. Obviously, they chose not to. in given where they were in the standings. But I think they're definitely, it's an up arrow farm system right now. You know, it still has a ways to go. They don't really have any high end talent, but you know, Kevin Alvarez is someone that we've liked all year and has jumped into the 100. As you mentioned, Jason Chiavone has had a very good season. He's jumped inside their top 10. They have some pitchers like Bryce Meyer, Jagger Beck, who have taken a step forward. You know, I think, yeah, this is a farm system that's definitely gaining talent. And, you know, by not trading it, that's one of the ways you do it. You know, you look at a lot of the systems that fell, it's because they traded a lot of their top guys. And by the Astros kind of holding pat with their top tier prospects, it's allowed them to start to climb up those rankings.
That is all the time we have on this episode of Baseball America Hot Sheet Show. Make sure you head on over to baseballamerica.com for all of our content, where we're going to answer probably some of your questions over there if we didn't get to you. So again, baseballamerica.com. Like and subscribe on YouTube. For JJ Cooper, Ian Kundle, I'm Jacob Rudner. We'll see you next time.